A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents Edward R. Murrow with the news. If you're out to make a quality product, you've got to keep quality on your mind right from the beginning. That's why the makers of Amoco Gas start out with the finest pure petroleum ingredients. For Amoco Gas is a pure motor fuel, not blended with non-petroleum products. There's nothing in it that cannot burn. That's why Amoco Gas is the highest quality motor fuel you can buy, and your best buy on every count. Use it, and you'll know why. And now here is Edward R. Murrow.
This is the news. The president says if we are forced into full-scale fighting in Korea, the enemy will find out that we are stronger than ever. He told reporters today that he is backing General Ridgway 100% in the armistice talks. There was no word from the enemy today on General Ridgway's proposal to get the conferences going again. A United Nations broadcast says the resumption of the talks no longer seems to hold promise of a possible agreement. And the Chinese Communist Radio says Korean General Nam Il has sent another protest to Vice Admiral Choi. This one contends that one of our B-26 bombers dropped a flare over the Kaesong area early Wednesday morning. There's no word on this from United Nations headquarters. Our flyers reported today that they saw more than 1,300 enemy trucks in North Korea, destroyed or damaged 270 of them. The Air Force says Saturday's attack on Rashin, 18 miles from the Soviet border, cut the railroad lines linking Rashin with Vladivostok. Also cut rails and roads south of Rashin. There's been a marked increase in the ground fighting north of Yanggu. Field dispatches say the enemy has a new division in this area. Today, the enemy launched three strong attacks. One lasted for 13 hours. All were repulsed. In Washington today, the United States and the Philippines signed a new defense treaty along the pattern of the North Atlantic Pact. Both nations agree that if either is attacked, they will act to meet the common danger. A similar treaty will be signed Saturday with Australia and New Zealand. India said today that she has no intention of proposing any treaty with Japan that would run counter to the provisions of the Allies Treaty. A white paper also says there is much unity of outlook between India and America on many vital problems. Some senators said today that John Foster Dulles has told them that Japan and nationalist China are going to sign a separate peace treaty after the Japanese treaty is signed at San Francisco. The president told reporters today that the Otis case will never be closed until the Associated Press correspondent is released from a jail in Czechoslovakia. The Czech ambassador to the United States said yesterday that the case was closed. The president also told reporters that a move in Congress to cut $1 billion from the $8.5 billion he wants for foreign aid is misplaced economy, might upset the whole apple cart on European recovery. The president says this is a very serious situation. It's a pity. But 11 senators, led by Republican Senator Dirksen of Illinois, say they're going to try to cut another $500 million from the bill. Defense mobilizer Wilson and price stabilizer DeSalle told the Senate Banking Committee today that we can expect more inflation and some price increases. They appealed for what they called a workable controls program. Three Republican senators have agreed to make the changes the administration wants. Senator Welker of Idaho says, then, if the president doesn't halt inflation, it's his responsibility. Former President Hoover said in Iowa today, our strength is not in politics, prices, or production. Our strength lies in spiritual concepts, in public sensitiveness to evils. Mr. Hoover says, we are now witnessing a decay of integrity and rotting of patriotism in public life. He is dismayed by the disclosures of dishonesty in high places. Mr. Hoover says, we may commit suicide from within by complacence with evil, by public tolerance of scandalous behavior, or by cynical acceptance of dishonor. But he feels America is turning away from maudlin left-isms. He feels moral indignation is on the march again. Here in New York, Governor Dewey, just back from a 40,000-mile tour of the Far East, said today, America has the power and the obligation to take over world leadership. He wants us to execute it constructively. The governor told the veterans of foreign wars, if we are strong enough, stop bellyaching, and rise above petty politics and personalities, we can save human liberty. He wants us to stop what he calls a bits and pieces foreign policy, wants a total outlook to stop the communists. Governor Dewey suggests a line, perhaps from the Arctic through New Zealand. He would then tell the communists, if you cross that, you'll get the same kind of bloody nose you got in Korea. Governor Dewey says, our estimates of enemy casualties in Korea are conservative. He says we've given the enemy the most terrible beating in history. He wants to encourage the Chinese nationalists to resist the communists. And he told of the great efforts being made by our allies in the Far East. We are not alone in this struggle, he told the veterans, and don't let anybody kid you. Senator McCarthy also spoke to the veterans of foreign wars. He said he'd like to let his charges against Secretary Acheson and Ambassador Jessup be heard by a jury. He said he would then resign if he failed to prove there are communists and stooges of the Kremlin in the State Department. The senator said he personally doesn't know how to get his case into a court. West Point Superintendent Major General Irving said today, no cadet found guilty in the cribbing scandal has been restored to duty, and there is no intention of so doing. A New York bar investigator has said that 7 of the accused cadets have been restored to duty. Our ambassador to Iran, Henry F. Grady, met with Premier Mossadegh today and later told reporters, the American government will make no further effort now to mediate the Anglo-Iranian oil dispute. In London, the Labour government has denied a story printed by the party's newspaper, the Daily Herald. The Herald said that military intelligence agents had found the 2 missing British diplomats, Donald MacLean and Guy Burgess. The head of the Foreign Office Press Department says that is not true. Starting next week, we shall be hearing more speeches from the Russians, this time at San Francisco. In order to understand what manner of men we are dealing with, it might perhaps be useful to try to close the range and sharpen the focus. It seems to me that we have, in a sense, become the victims of bigness. Senators and broadcasters often say millions when they mean billions. Whole nations sink down into slavery. But we're inclined to think of that as a place on the map, rather than as so many human beings. Thousands of children's shoes, for example, found near the gas ovens in Germany, were less shocking than would have been just a couple of pairs of well-worn kids' shoes. Hundreds of dead bodies stacked like cordwood in a concentration camp are somehow less shocking than just 1 or 2. The mind is somehow numbed by numbers, by bigness. It is for this reason, as a sort of prelude to the oratory at San Francisco, that I tell you the end of a 3-year-old mystery. It involves a man you've probably never heard of, the chief inspector of police in Vienna. His name, Anton Marek. He was in charge of the criminal police, had nothing to do with politics or intelligence, and he had no contact with the Russians. He did purge the Austrian police force of about 200 communist members. 3 years ago, he disappeared. On June 17, 1948, he was summoned by telephone to the Soviet High Command in Vienna. After that, nothing. He was neither seen nor heard from again. Repeatedly at meetings of the 4 powers that control and occupy Vienna, the British and American representatives wanted to know what had happened to Chief Inspector Marek. The Russians, for weeks, sat there stolidly and denied any knowledge of his whereabouts. Finally, when 4 power relations neared the breaking point and the Austrian government threatened to bring the matter before the United Nations, the Russian commanding general admitted that Marek was in Russian custody and said he would soon divulge the charges against him and what disposition had been made of the case. Last night, a laconic announcement from the Russian Foreign Ministry ended the mystery. The 3-year silence was broken. The announcement said that 60-year-old Marek had been taken to the Soviet Union, where he is now serving a 25-year prison sentence for espionage. The Moscow announcement gave no details of when and where Marek was tried, if he was. No indication of the evidence against him, and no information as to where he may be serving that 25-year sentence. His wife, however, has now been informed that she may write to him. The four-power council will meet again in Vienna tomorrow. The Western representatives will undoubtedly ask questions and protest. But in point of fact, there is nothing they can do about it. Now, of course, we do not know whether Anton Marek was a good police officer or whether he engaged in espionage. But the record of the Russian action in this matter is clear. There was a time, I think, not so long ago, certainly no farther back than Dreyfus or Sacco and Vanzetti, when this sort of thing would have produced a great sense of outrage and indignation and many brilliantly written editorials. We seem to have become numbed and calloused by numbers and bigness. Anton Marek becomes not a symbol, but just another cop grabbed by the Russians in violation of formal treaties, shipped off to some unknown prison. When millions of once free men in Poland, Czechoslovakia, and throughout Eastern Europe live in slavery, what does it matter that a Viennese police inspector is grabbed and sentenced to 25 years? While the Russians sit there and say they haven't the least idea what happened to him. The Anton Mareks, the Bill Otises, and the Jan Masaryks will not be sitting in on the conferences at San Francisco or at Kaesong. But they illustrate, together with other millions, the Russian attitude toward the individual and toward international agreements. They are the essential, the indispensable backdrop before which Mr. Gromyko must play his part in San Francisco. And individually and collectively, they raise the question of whether any agreement entered into anywhere with this evil force will merit the confidence of any man who values freedom. This is Ed Murrow. I'll be back in a moment with the word for today. Now, here is Bob Dixon.
An automobile isn't just thrown together at the factory. It's carefully and painstakingly assembled from carefully tested parts. And these parts, whether they're a radiator ornament or a vital bearing of alloy steel, are made of specially approved materials. But the designers go even further. Even the lubricants for that car, special lubricants for every bearing surface, these must be approved too. One particular grade of oil or grease, and one grade only, is approved for each particular wear point. Amoco approved lubricants have this approval. When your Amoco man services your car, the Amoco lubricants he uses are the exact grade of lubricants approved by factory engineers. There can be no substitute, no something different, no something just as good. You get just what the engineers ordered, the exact grade of Amoco approved lubricants that was intended for it. No wonder cars given regular Amoco-approved lubrication last so long and run so smoothly. That's my word for today, and here's Mr. Murrow with his word for today.
We don't seem to be making much progress toward the goal set out by Benjamin Franklin when he said, "God grant that not only the love of liberty, but a thorough knowledge of the rights of man may pervade all the nations of the earth, so that a philosopher may set his feet anywhere on its surface and say, 'This is my country.'" And as Walt Whitman put it, rather more crisply, "An individual is as superb as a nation." Good night and good luck.
From Maine to Florida, the word's been going around among users of regular gasoline. They're finding out that there's a big difference in regular gasoline, just as there is in premium gasoline. They know the best of the regulars is American Gas. It's refined by the makers of Amoco Gas, and there's nothing to match it in any regular gas pump. For this wonderful American Gas, for all famous Amoco products, stop at the Amoco oval sign of greater values from Maine to Florida. Listen to Murrow tomorrow. This is the CBS Radio Network.